hello. Well, if you're fed up with all that processed food and stuff you buy in boxes through these different companies, listen to this programme, because At the Table with Gail, our resident chef, Gail Hall, has got some fabulous recipes every week, which are generally easy to make. Lots of stuff that you've already got in your pantries, in your larders and your fridge, and it makes cooking so enjoyable. Gail, hello once again.
Well, hello, Peter, and that's a really good introduction, because today one of our recipes comes from cooking to a budget. So basically, you know, what you've just said is how we work.
And I think that's, you know, these days people are saying how the cost of living and that. And if you look around, there are some cheap stuff.
That's right.
You and I last week, we both made the mulligatawny soup that you gave us the recipe for.
That's right.
Tell us about yours.
Well, like you say, it was inexpensive to make and really, really nice. And you could add chicken. So Peter and I have sort of, you know, a bit of competition now. And he basically made his without chicken, which I've got a sample, and I brought some in for him with chicken. So it's going to be interesting, but a very nice soup. I actually had some for tea, and really, really nice and easy to make. So look at that recipe and think, this is a good soup, and it's wholesome.
It's brilliant. It is. It's hearty. And, I mean, you're talking about one carrot, one onion, and one apple.
Exactly.
And then some bits and bobs. And you're using, what is it, six cups. You know, there's a lot of liquid goes into it.
So
it
That's right.
It makes a huge pile of soup. And, you know, if you like something a little bit spicy, it's terrific.
Yeah. Well, six cups, you know, I looked at it and I thought, gee, this soup's pretty thin. There's not going to be much in it. But then, to the end of the recipe, it said, add a half a cup of rice. So I thought, well, there you are.
And then it really thickened
up. That's right.
So the other one I made last night, we had somebody around for dinner and it seemed an opportunity to use it, were your Greek meatball, or was your Greek meatball bake.
All right.
Now, this is good. It's a good one.
Is it?
This is one where there was potatoes cut into batons, laid in a dish.
Yes.
And you cook those first. You make the meatballs from lamb mince with green onions and a bit of garlic, cumin and cinnamon. Lay those on top. So you cook the potatoes first, bake them, then you put the meatballs on, and you bake with some zucchini, chopped up. So, well, no, batons again.
Oh, right,
zucchini.
The batons, yeah.
And then finally, you put cherry tomatoes sprinkled around the top with feta cheese.
Oh.
And bake again. And I'll tell you what, it was jolly nice. But if anybody wants to make it,
right,
increase the cooking times, because they talk about 15 minutes for the potatoes, then 10 minutes for the meatballs, then 10 minutes for the final thing.
Oh,
about
right.
Just over half an hour in all. I did it for just over an hour.
Oh, good. So what temperature are we talking about?
180.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Oh, no, that's good. Because I'm actually, if you said it's so good, I will actually end up making that myself to have a go.
I think you should. Yep. It's a really nice one. It's a bit more expensive to make, because I found at this time of year, cherry tomatoes about $6 and the feta cheese about $6. Mm. Never mind the mince on top of it.
No, but that's right.
It was a nice meal, and we it suggests you have it with pita bread and satsiki.
That's right.
Which
that's
we
right.
Did,
yeah.
And it was nice. And part of it is you put these bits of lemon on the top and bake those, then squeeze the juice out
That's
at the end.
Right.
And that just finishes it off nicely.
Well, tell me, what comments did you get from your guests?
Well, it was just one, and he thought it was really good. And he immediately he shoveled down a second helping.
Oh, well, that's enough.
Well, yeah. That's right. That's a good test, isn't
and
it?
Did you tell him to continue listening to our program, because this is where he gets these, you know, these lovely recipes?
I think he's aware of that.
Oh, okay. Right.
So
okay.
Anyway, thank you, Gail. That was the mulligatawny and the Greek meatballs. Really good.
Right. We're doing well in our home kitchens. So this one I'm going to start off this week for our soup of the week, Peter, is cream of fish soup, which I don't think we've had anything like that. I think we've had other types of soup. What's that one with the white sauce and the fish in it? What do you call those ones now? Just can't put my name to it.
A bouillabaisse or something?
Yeah, something like that. But we're starting off with 225 grams of white fish bones, 600 mils of water, a few slices of onion, a few slices of carrot. That's how they've categorised it. But anyway, a few slices could be one small onion and one small carrot. One bay leaf, three peppercorns, 225 grams of snapper fillets. Now, I know that's sort of like at the high end, isn't it, really, the snapper?
It is. But
do you think we could use something a little bit cheaper, Peter?
Well, we have fish every Friday night, and we tend to go for whatever's cheaper, whether it's monkfish or whatever, and there's been some really cheap red cod. And
all right.
This it's white fish as far as I can see.
Exactly. So the recipe calls for snapper fillets, but look, you just make your choice because it's still going to be fish soup. 30 grams of butter, 2 tablespoons of flour, 300 mils of milk, 2 tablespoons of white wine, which seems to go with in the fish soups. It just adds a little bit of, you know, a bit of a kick. And 6 oysters and, of course, salt and pepper. Now, you're simmering your fish bones because this is going to end up being your stock. Simmer fish bones, water, onion, carrot, bay leaf, peppercorns, and seasoning in a saucepan for 20 minutes. Strain carefully.
I've got to butt in there on behalf of all the listeners. Where do you get your white fish bones from?
Well, I think if you've had fish before... and I don't think it necessarily has to be fish bones, but sometimes you can see fish stocky type things in the supermarket.
I know sometimes in New World you can get fish heads.
Correct.
That would do.
I was trying to think of what there was I'd seen and fish heads. So that would be perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, so for Peter and I, we'll say fish heads because it's the same thing. And unless you've had fish previously and that's been quite bony, you could freeze them. But no, we'll go for fish heads, I think, Peter. And you're simmering that for 20 minutes and strain very carefully. Now, you're poaching the snapper or whatever fish you've got in the stock for 10 minutes. So you've strained it, kept it. And then remove and pound to a smooth paste. And I looked at that and I thought, oh, that's unusual. But anyway, melt the butter in a saucepan and blend in the flour because you're making a sauce. Add milk and fish stock and stir until boiling and thickened. Add the wine and simmer for 5 minutes. Blend in the fish. So it's if it's been, you know, sort of pounded, it'll be... You know, not in big hunks.
Paste,
so it'd be just
it?
Sort of paste and put it through. That I think that can be sort of a little bit versatile too as well. But anyway, we do follow the recipes if we can. And put the oysters in as well and then adjust the seasoning. It's very important to adjust the seasoning. And a very simple, lovely soup.
That's a good one, though, and I like the idea of making the stock rather than using stock cubes or anything
stock.
Else.
Yeah, I like that too, Peter.
I think I've told you before, if ever we have prawns, well, they're frozen prawns, but I always boil up and simmer the shells and the heads, all the stuff that you peel off before you use the prawn, and make a fish stock. And you could use that for this.
Well, you could. Mm. Exactly. Well, I looked at here and I thought, well, it's got 3 peppercorns, and I was thinking about... yesterday when I put peppercorns into the mullikatawny, as you know, because you've made it. And I thought to myself, when I was stirring at the end, I thought, oh, that's right. I think I put about 6 or 7 and I just sort of, you know, sorry, saying about following a recipe. I just poured a little bunch out of my hand and I thought, oh, 4, oh, 5, 6, 7, never mind, throw it in.
I can never do that. I'm the same as you, Gail. They say 3 peppercorns. Well, I've got to put 6 in, and cloves are the same if there's whole cloves. How could you just put 1 or 2 cloves
exactly.
in a curry? Oh, chuck a handful in.
So anyway, that amuses me because I did actually take them out. You know, I was going through with a spoon and I was taking out the peppercorns and throwing them away. So, yeah, you can do that.
Well, I didn't throw mine away, so watch out for that sample I brought you. You might cop a peppercorn.
Oh, might I? Okay, so that's our soup of the week. And the next recipe that I'm going to talk to you about is meatloaf cups. Now, I've actually made these, and sadly, Peter didn't get the opportunity to try them because I had quite a gang, and they all ate them. Now, I did make these. I'm going to say this now. I did make some with gluten-free bread because there was a mixture of people, and which they came out okay. They loved them because, you know, that was on gluten-free bread, and the recipe doesn't really – doesn't have any other gluten in it. So basically, but I've said there in the recipe, I think, Peter, that you can use 12 slices of multigrain bread or plain white, which I think would roll out better. But anyway, these were successful, so it's your choice. And I did use some gluten-free bread, which was, you know, sort of like a little bit difficult, especially my son's bread. It's sort of like almost like a brick. But anyway, it did work. So they went down really well. So you're removing the crusts from the bread and you're reserving those. You don't throw them out to the birds. And cooking oil spray, one green onion finely chopped, one rasher of bacon, and you know, you can just cut the rind off, finely chopped, 250 grams of beef mince, one carrot coarsely grated, one egg lightly whisked, a quarter of a cup of chopped parsley, a quarter of a cup of barbecue sauce, and a third of a cup of grated cheese. And Peter was just mentioning about cherry tomatoes. Well, this has 6 cherry tomatoes halved, but fortunately, I did have a couple of ordinary tomatoes. I didn't have the cherry ones. And I just cut them into sort of reasonably thick slices, and you'll see in the method that I just stuck those on top. So
well, a tomato is a tomato.
A tomato is a tomato, Peter. So what we're doing is preheating the oven to 180 degrees Celsius, grease a 12-hole muffin tray. And now, using a rolling pin, and I have got a great big wooden one, which is fantastic, roll out bread to flatten slightly. So I sort of rolled it out, remembering, you know, you're taking the crusts off, so it does roll out pretty good. Line the prepared holes, and of course you're spraying your muffin tray, and put the bread in the muffin spaces, allowing the bread to stand above the rim of the holes. So you can just sort of, you know, you're not having them to size. You've got that bread still around the top of the rim. Spray the bread with oil and bake for 5 minutes or until golden brown. So you're putting them in the oven without any mixture in to start with. Then place the reserved bread crusts in a bowl or of a food processor and make them into fine bread crumbs. Heat a frying pan over the moderate heat. Spray onion and bacon with oil and add to the pan. Cook and stir for 2 minutes or until the bacon is crisp. And cool that slightly. Combine the mince, carrot, egg, parsley, barbecue sauce, breadcrumbs, and the bacon mixture. Put it into a bowl and spoon into the bread cases. Sprinkle with cheese, top with a tomato half or a tomato decent slice, and then bake for 20 minutes or until golden brown and cooked. Stand for 5 minutes, then cool on a wire rack. Now, I just want to put in one thing from memory when I did do this. I felt it needed some, I know it had barbecue sauce in it, but I did feel that it needed some salt and pepper because it just needed some seasoning. And it doesn't really mention here about putting any seasoning, but I'm a bit of a fan for salt and pepper just to give it that extra boost. And but they were just like little savouries. Put them out on the plate and had them with something else. I can't think, I made a salad or something. But they were great, and they went down a treat.
And you served them as a meal? So
we had a lunch. It was a lunch. Yeah, because they'd like been, you know, lunch. Pretty yeah. busy. And it was a great lunch, but you could have it as a meal. Nothing wrong. Put have a beautiful baked potato in its skin or something like that, and a bit of broccoli, and, you know, be lovely.
I think I might try those sometime.
Here we go again.
And I totally agree with you, Sultan, but some of these recipes don't mention salt and pepper, and
no,
I know everybody says you should cut down on salt, but a little bit, I think it lifts
it does
the flavour so much.
I totally agree, Peter. Mm. Totally agree. So there's another one, meatloaf cups, really great, and of course this makes 12. So if you want more than that, you'll have to you know, get out some more sliced bread.
Well, again, all your recipes seem to make for an army of people.
Well, that's when you get an army of people to come and visit you, Peter. Yeah. But anyway, that's our first two, Peter.
Lovely. So it brings us to the musical interlude. Now, this is a bit of it's a bit of a play on words, this one, Gail. I hope you like it. It's a sort of fishy song. See what you think to this one.
A place for us, somewhere, a place for us, peace and quiet and an open hand wait for us somewhere. There's a time for us, a summer day, a time for us, time together with a time to spare, time to learn, time to care. Somewhere, and I don't want in this a place for us, a time and a place for us. Hold on my hand, and we're a halfway there. Hold my hand, and I'll take. There is a place for us, a time and a place for us. Hold my hand, and we're halfway there. Hold my hand, and I'll take you there.
Well, there we are then, Gail. And if you're listening and you're racking your brains, of course, it was PJ Proby. And a little bit of play on words there. So there, you could always use a piece of place for your fish bones.
Oh, well done, Peter. Lovely, lovely song. Lovely song. Yeah, well sung too. Okay, we're going to go into our second half, and we've got butter, cauliflower and paneer. Well, I looked at this because the illustration looked absolutely fantastic, and I thought to myself, what is paneer? And I wasn't quite sure, and I didn't want to bring it along unless I knew. So I looked it up, and it can be substituted, although probably not the same taste as halloumi. And there was other substitute too, as ricotta cheese, but looking at the illustration, I didn't think that would go so well in this dish. With the look of it, you're better off having something a bit solid. So basically, I decided, yes, I'm going to do this. So we're starting off with a quarter of a cup of oil, a 200 gram packet of paneer, if you see it, or halloumi. And usually when I'm looking for something, you know, that I don't normally use, when I've given it to you over the radio, I'll go into the supermarket. It'll be staring me in the face. So you can have your own choice and just cut that into pieces or to squares. 2 tablespoons of tandoori curry paste, 1 small cauliflower cut into florets, 1 cup of tomato passata, 1 cup of vegetable stock, 1/2 cup of cream, 1 tablespoon of corn flour, 2 tablespoons of chopped coriander, 1/2 teaspoon of garam masala, and of course brown rice and quinoa, or a mix of those two. Now, I just want to just add a tip here. If you don't want to cook brown rice, because that takes a long time, you can actually get the brown rice in sort of like packets now. Yeah, microwave ones, or you can, you know, put them on the stove on a steamer or something like that. So if you, you know, inclined to be in a bit of a hurry, you know, there's a little tip that you can just grab those and it, you know, you haven't got that long cooking time.
That's a good idea, because a lot of people seem to have trouble cooking rice, don't they? I don't know
well,
why.
Well, brown rice particularly, yeah, because it does take so long. I'm not a great rice cooker. My son cooks rice really good. So when I had rice the other night with a meal, I said, I hope I've done enough for everybody. He said, oh, Mum, you could have done a bit more, because, I mean, I never know how to judge it, and I'm not really great. But anyway, it turned out okay, and everybody ate it. But yes, it's a tricky thing. In a wok, heat oil over high heat and add the paneer. Cook, turning gently. So that means, you know, you've got it cut in squares. It's just like cooking tofu, I guess. And cook, turning gently, 5 minutes or until golden, and then transfer to a plate. Drain all but 1 tablespoon of oil. Add paste to wok, stir 1 minute, add the cauliflower and toss to coat. Add passata and stock and simmer partially covered 10 minutes, and then simmer uncovered for 5 minutes, and then again add cream and simmer for another 5 minutes. In a small bowl, combine the corn flour with 1 tablespoon of water, stir into curry, cook, stirring 1 to 2 minutes until thickened. Stir in the paneer, coriander and garam masala. Season what we were talking about just previous with salt and pepper, and serve curry with rice or quinoa or a mix of both. Very easy dish. And I'll tell you what, looking at this illustration, it certainly makes me feel hungry.
Oh, that does look nice. Beautiful, beautiful colour.
Yeah, beautiful colour. And that's why I think if you're replacing the paneer with ricotta, I don't think it will have the same look or the texture. So stick to the paneer or the halloumi, or even, dare I suggest, tofu.
Well, I was thinking the same thing. You could probably use tofu.
Yeah.
You see, here's yet another recipe that there's nothing expensive in there, is there?
No, there's not. So really, really. And I think, if I remember rightly, cauliflowers are a good price at the moment.
A cauliflower? Oh, I bought a Whopper yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
And how much?
Well, I feel I got done. I thought it was supposed to be $2.50, and I think I was charged $3, but it is a big cauliflower.
Oh, so you get a lot of meals out of that.
Yeah. Mm. I think Claire will be making soup and stuff.
Oh, right. Well, I was very happy with my celery that I found the other week that you suggested, a half a celery.
For $1.
For $1.
And was it a beautiful one we got?
Crisp.
From a supermarket.
Beautiful, absolutely. And to be quite honest, I keep it in my veggie drawer in the fridge, and there's nothing wrong with that celery. I'm going to have another go at it either later today or tomorrow. It's needed in another recipe for $1.
And extend it even longer, I believe, by wrapping it up in aluminium foil, cooking foil.
Oh, well, I just wrap mine in newspaper, and I do that with my broccoli as well.
Okay.
And it lasts, you know, it's got a good shelf life in your fridge in the veggies
department.
That's
the main thing, isn't it?
So
yeah.
There we are. We're not just here to give you cooking recipes. We like to give you hints about, you know, sort of preserving your food and other, you know, little hints.
Oh, all sorts of life training from Gail and myself.
Now, we're going to finish off today, Peter, with this wholesome Earl Grey and sultana loaf. And I'm not sure whether I might try this. Now, I haven't got one of those tins, you know, that to make it a roll. But I think if you perhaps take the, you know, when you've got a tin of spaghetti or baked beans, I'm not sure how big that would be, to make it in something like that, or you can make it in just a loaf tin. But I like to impress. If it's going to be a roll, I like to think that I'll do it in a roll. So we're starting off with 80 grams of sultanas, 125 mils of hot, strongly brewed Earl Grey tea. Now, I chose this. I actually don't like Earl Grey tea. So I thought to myself, when I saw this, I thought, well, I'm going to try this because it might taste different, you know, when you're baking. So this could be my one for next week, you know, Peter.
Uh-huh.
Just to see what it's like. 125 grams of butter softened, 140 grams of brown sugar, finely grated zest of one orange, 2 eggs, 75 grams of wholemeal flour, 50 grams of plain flour, plus extra to dust, you know, just dust over it, 1 teaspoon of baking powder and a pinch of salt. Right, you're placing the sultanas in a small bowl and cover with the hot Earl Grey tea. Cover and allow to plump up for about an hour or two. That'll absorb most of that Earl Grey tea. Preheat the oven to 160 degrees Celsius, fan force, and grease a nut roll tin if you've got one, or a medium loaf tin. And grease it well with butter and dust with plain flour, tapping out the excess, you know. Like, I think, you know, you can do that. But a lot of people, of course, now use baking paper. But this is telling us, and that's what I'll do if I make it. Drain the soaked sultanas, reserving what tea is left. In the bowl of a stand mixer with a paddle attachment, cream the butter, sugar, and orange zest until light and fluffy. Add the eggs one at a time, beating well after each addition. Place the wholemeal flour, plain flour, baking powder, and salt in a separate bowl and just whisk to combine. You're just mixing those up. Add half to the creamed butter mixture, stirring gently before adding the sultana and 2 tablespoons of the reserved tea. Mix until just combined before adding the rest of the flour mix, stirring gently until smooth. Now carefully spoon the mixture into the tin, using the back of the spoon to remove any pockets of air in the batter as you go. Tap the tin lightly on the bench a few times to settle the batter. Then bake for 40 to 45 minutes or until the cake is golden brown and cooked through. Allow to cool for 10 minutes or so in the tin before turning out onto a wire rack to cool. This is the best part. Serve the cake warm in thick slices with butter if you like. So there you are, nice and easy. Now, I know I've done this before, Peter, with other, you know, big cakes I've made. I've picked them up and dropped them on the bench a couple of times just to let the, if there's any air in there, just to get it out.
Right, okay, yes, I think I've seen that.
I think that's what they're saying there.
Yeah. I've sort of read that last bit as serve the cake warm with thick slices of butter, but it's not, is it?
Well, it might as well be.
that's an interesting one as well.
Yeah, so actually, I might just see if I can find one of those round tins. It'd be interesting to have in my cupboard.
Yes.
Because it'd be quite impressive. So let's have a look at it. I'd have to pinch an Earl Grey tea bag from a friend because I don't actually have that in my cupboard. But I think I might do that.
Well, it's another recipe. You could say, well, why not use something else other than Earl Grey?
Well, that's true. It's a distinctive. Oh, well, I wonder if you could use just a herb, you know, like an infusion. Raspberry, an infusion
or
something.
Yeah, orange. And,
Oh, you've made me think. A person gave me, they've just come back from Turkey, and he actually gave me some teas. Right, you've just given me an idea. I'm going to use one of these Turkish teas that I might use. Well, good thinking.
Watch this space and come back next week for the continuing story of Gail and the wholesome the wholesome tea and sultana roll, Turkish tea.
And you with?
I'm not quite sure.
Oh, he's just going to ponder now, so we'll be surprised.
I will cook something here. I will probably do the meatloaf cups at home.
All right, so yeah.
Not bring one in, you see. But anyway, you can always look.
Excuse me?
Oh, yeah,
did you hear that, listeners? He might bring one in. Cheeky boy.
I thought, actually, Gail, on that theme, you and I are both sort of posting photographs of what we've done on the website. I thought we'll just suggest, if there's anybody listening.
Well, let's hope there is.
It's a big question, yeah. Isn't it? If anybody's listening and if you are having a go at these things and you've turned them out, by all means, submit a photograph with a little bit of a chat about how you got on and send it into Coast Access Radio. I think it goes into admin, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Admin at coastaccessradio.org.nz.
Yeah.
Yeah, coastaccessradio.org.nz.
Yeah.
And, you know, make a name for yourself like we try to.
Yeah. Good to hear from them.
Okay, Gail, thank you very much. We're running out way over time, did you? No, not really. That's fine. Thank you. Lovely.
Thank you.
See you next week.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.